the determination was made that at this point, Begich has the better odds.
Governor Bill Walker suspends his campaign for re-election, setting up a two-way race. From Alaska Public Media, this is statewide news on Alaska News Nightly for Friday, October 19th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention and the theme of preventing violence against women.
To make this a time of change, a call to action, because we cannot be silent any longer.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Matson, committed to the communities it serves, building on more than 50 years of service to the communities of Alaska. Learn more at matson.com.
Governor Bill Walker has announced he's suspending his campaign for re-election. Walker urged Alaskans to throw their support behind Democratic candidate Mark Begich. Walker made the announcement Friday afternoon on stage at the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Anchorage.
Every decision I made as your governor, I have made on the basis of what I believe is best for Alaska. With that said, effective today, I am suspending my campaign.
The announcement comes days after Walker's Lieutenant Governor Byron Mallott resigned and dropped out of the race. Walker said Mallott made inappropriate comments to a woman. On the AFN stage, Walker repeated something he told his cabinet this week in an emergency meeting.
Ultimately, it's not how long my team and I serve. It's how well we serve the people and the state we love while we have the opportunity and the honor to serve.
The announcement means, with a little over 2 weeks until the election, that there is now a two-way race for governor. Republican challenger Mike Dunleavy sat in the crowd at AFN not far from his new main challenger, Mark Begich. Walker says Begich has a better chance of beating Dunleavy. Dunleavy told the Anchorage Daily News he was still going to win the race. The names of Walker and Mallott must remain on the ballot because it's past the deadline to withdraw. But the move gives Begich a better chance of beating Dunleavy. Democratic Governors Association spokesman Jason Leopold says the DGA is optimistic about winning in Alaska. He says the association will be making a decision on whether to spend money in the state.
We'll be keeping a close eye on Alaska. This is obviously a game changer that we saw today, and we'll see what happens in the coming weeks.
At a debate with Dunleavy following the governor's announcement, Begich applauded the governor's decision to suspend his campaign.
I do want to acknowledge the amazing, courageous action that the governor did. He was about Alaska.
Walker began his administration with broad support, but his decision to veto half of the permanent fund dividend funding early in his term began a long decline in his approval rating. While the legislature voted for two later PFD cuts, Walker took much of the blame. But that move and subsequent cuts by the legislature allowed it to pass a plan to pay for state government using permanent fund earnings. Walker said that without this, deep reductions in state government services would have hurt Alaskans by harming schools, healthcare, and the state's economy. During his term as governor, Walker has enjoyed broad support from Alaska Native people. The reaction to his decision to withdraw from the campaign at the AFN convention was intense. While some Begich supporters were relieved by the news, plenty of Walker backers were dealing with a range of emotions. Cordelia Kelly was a volunteer for the campaign during rural outreach. She was sitting in a regional caucus meeting when she got a text about Walker's announcement.
I think a lot of emotion because of how beautiful also the response was by your people that Governor Walker chose AFN to break the news. It really speaks to his relationship with our Native communities, and I think that he's inspiring a lot of us, and his legacy will continue in us in terms of like high moral leadership and tough decisions that you have to make. And he came in at one of the hardest times in our state's, you know, history.
Melanie Banke is a leader from the Bering Strait region. She says the Walker administration has drastically improved Alaska Native representation in the state's executive branch.
There was definitely a positive change in the last 4 years towards tribal relations. So I'm hoping that we don't go one step backward. I hope we continue two steps forward with state-tribal relations, regardless of who's in administration, because administrations come and go. But as Alaska Native people, we're here to stay. for the next 10,000 years. So we'll have to work with whoever's in the governor's office.
Well, the theme at this year's convention is innovation in the past, present, and future. As Alaska Public Media's Zachariah Hughes reports, the issue of violence against women is at the forefront of the conference.
The morning started with songs from Anchorage and Wales-based Kikikmeut drummers. Most of the day's speakers on the convention's main stage gave updates on legal, judicial, and federal issues affecting Alaskan natives. But some, like Cook Inlet Tribal Council's Gloria O'Neill, directly addressed this year's theme.
Innovation is at the core of how we not only survived, but thrived for a millennia.
O'Neill described CITC's process for developing the 2014 video game Never Alone, where players guide a young Inupiaq girl through an Arctic quest. O'Neill says the experience offers a template for taking Alaska's history, stories, and talent towards emerging industries that benefit state residents and ANC shareholders.
We're asking permission to take our culture and our stories to this virtual world. We paired Alaska Native elders, storytellers, youth, writers with video gaming experts.
But for the last few days, the theme of defending Alaska Native women from sexual violence has been more prominent than just about anything else. During an update from the Alaska Native Justice Center, prominent attorney Heather Kendall Miller alluded to the recent Justin Schneider case, appealing to groups like AFN to push for criminal justice reforms.
To make this a time of change, a call to action, because we cannot be silent any longer. We have to be able to move together and call and demand for some changes.
Kendall Miller called for reforms in how sexual assault cases against Alaska Native women are investigated, prosecuted, and for an increase in the state of Alaska's accountability delivering justice to victims. The morning also saw remarks from Congressman Don Young, who championed his record delivering results to Alaska Natives in the Capitol and asked for their support in the November election. In Anchorage, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
Conservatives are mad at Senator Lisa Murkowski for opposing the confirmation of Brett Kavanaugh to the U.S. Supreme Court. But some liberals were mad at her too, because technically she didn't vote no on Kavanaugh. She voted present. From the left have come accusations that Murkowski chickened out, that she dodged a hard vote by taking refuge in an obscure Senate procedure. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin looked at the history of this procedure, known as a paired vote, and why it exists.
Hi, I'm here to see Daniel.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
come
you.
Come on in.
Lucky for us, the U.S. Senate employs historians.
My name is Dan Holt. I'm the assistant historian here at the Senate Historical Office. We are the institutional memory of the Senate.
Holt says senators have been pairing votes since at least 1859 as a courtesy to each other. If one senator had to miss a vote, another senator who wanted to vote the opposite way would abstain. Holt says dating back to the 19th century, the custom fit with the Senate's view of itself as a place where gentlemen wouldn't want to take unfair advantage.
They, I think, mostly thought it would not be fair if a vote would go one way or the other just because some senators were absent.
Holt says Murkowski's action on the Kavanaugh nomination was a perfect example of a paired vote.
Senator Daines, who is walking his daughter down the aisle this afternoon, if he were present and voting, he would have voted aye. I have voted no. The pair will not change the outcome of the vote. I therefore withdraw my vote.
The historian says the practice used to be far more common, in part because senators used to miss a lot more votes back when constituents didn't make a thing out of absenteeism.
It definitely tapered off in the 1980s and 1990s, but there are still examples of it if you search the congressional record, even into the 2000s.
Holt says the late Senator Ted Stevens would sometimes pair votes, often with Senator Daniel Inouye.
I asked that the last vote be amended to show that I stated that I did have a pair with the senator from Hawaii. If he were present, he would have voted no. I would have voted aye, and therefore I'd like this record to show that that was a paired vote. It would not change the outcome of that vote.
Is there objection?
Holt says a key element for vote pairing is to state for the record how the senators would have voted if they weren't paired.
So it's not an effective way of
avoiding a tough vote because you're declaring yourself.
Right. It's the exact opposite. The senator wants to make sure that their position goes down into the record, even if they can't be present.
Murkowski may have confounded some of her constituents with the vote pair. A poll by Alaska Survey Research shows her favorability rating dipped the week of the Kavanaugh vote, even among self-identified progressives. But a follow-up poll suggests Alaska voters are back to where they were before, with about half saying they have a positive view of the senator. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, how Alaska's recession compares to other energy-dependent states.
Alaska could have learned the lesson over the past decades, but has chosen not to.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute, committing to improving the lives of Alaskans. Using a team approach, Alaska Heart and Vascular Institute offers a range of cardiovascular diagnoses and care. Learn more at alaskaheart.com. And by the law firm of Landy Bennett Blumstein, attorneys who know the people, businesses, tribes, and communities of Alaska. Landy Bennett Blumstein, online at lbblawyers.com.
A debris slide has closed the road into Denali National Park. The National Park Service says debris fell onto the road at mile 38, the same location as a 2013 slide. The Park Service closed the road to vehicles, pedestrians, and bicycles at Igloo Campground at mile 34. The agency says visitors may drive personal vehicles as far as the Teklinika Rest Area at mile 30 and bike or walk to Igloo Campground. When oil prices sank 3 years ago, Alaska's economy went in the same direction. And while recessions in other energy-dependent states have come and gone, Alaska's economy has yet to recover. Alaska Public Media's Abby Collins has more on one economist's look at why it's taking longer here and what Alaska can learn from other states.
Economist Muhsin Ghatabi set out to compare Alaska's recession to those of other energy-dependent states and how oil prices influence those states. Ghatabi works at the University of Alaska's Institute of Social and Economic Research. In a new report, he found that out of 13 historically energy-dependent states, 6 experienced economy-wide job loss as a result of oil price declines starting in 2014. Out of those,
only 2 of the 6 continue to be in a recession.
North Dakota and Alaska. According to Ghatabi, Alaska lost ground for 34 straight months, the longest recession in the state's history. In that time, the state has lost between 12 and 13,000 jobs. Ghatabi says while Alaska is not the only state in the country that relies on oil revenue, in Alaska, that reliance is on another level.
The ones that don't have a lot of oil revenue dependence seemed to recover a little bit faster because, you know, they only had that private channel dependence and their budgets were not struggling as much as ours.
Ghatabi says the state's decision to use permanent fund earnings to help pay for state government should help the economy in the future. According to Ghatabi, states that recovered faster also had industries that were still growing while the economy as a whole was in recession.
In Alaska, with the exception of healthcare and tourism, basically everything across the board was going down.
Ghatabi says going forward, it will be important to support other sectors of the economy to ensure they're less dependent on oil and gas. He looked at states where the economy has recovered. There, he found when oil prices started rising again, the economy reacted and grew faster than it has in Alaska. Larry Persily is a former federal pipeline coordinator in Alaska. He says the state will always be the last to come out of oil-driven recession.
Alaska is more heavily dependent on oil and gas than any of the other producing states, be it Oklahoma, North Dakota, Texas, Louisiana, California. New Mexico, the list goes on and on.
Persily says the state could take more steps to reduce that reliance, but so far that hasn't happened. He says the lessons to be learned here are painful.
As exhibited by the fact that Alaska could have learned the lesson over the past decades, but has chosen not to.
While the price of oil is up right now, Persily says it's inevitable it will dip again at some point. He points to income and sales taxes in other states that lessen dependence on oil prices.
It wouldn't hurt us to pay for the public services that we enjoy and not be so heavily reliant on fluctuation in global oil markets and production.
While Alaska's economy is not out of recession yet, there are some positive signs leading economists to believe it may be nearing the end. Whether the state will have a different experience if oil prices dip again is another question. In Anchorage, I'm Abby Collins.
The tiny island village of Diomede hosts a community of around 100 people and is one of Alaska's most remote communities, just a couple miles from the international dateline. Until recently, this community didn't have access to many of the funds that rural communities rely on for airline passenger travel. KNOM's Emily Hofstetter has more.
Diomede no longer has to rely on uncertain state funding for airline passenger service. On October 5th, 2018, President Trump signed a reauthorization of the Federal Aviation Administration's Essential Air Service Program, or EAS. And for the first time ever, that includes Diomede. Until this month, they remained the only community in the country ineligible for full EAS service through the Department of Transportation. Now residents hope this could mean significant changes for transportation to and from the island. In 1978, the entire airline industry was deregulated, causing concern that airlines would flock to larger cities for more profit and leave rural communities without services. Decades ago, there were no regular passenger flights to the village, so they were determined to be ineligible. Until 2012, people could only fly to Diomede standby on a mail carrier, providing there was enough room among the packages and letters. There are currently 3 passenger flights a month to the island community, thanks to the Air Transportation to Non-Eligible Places Program, or ATNIP. Currently, Diomede is only serviced by 3 flights a month. Frances Ozena is the tribal coordinator of the Native Village of Diomede and unpacks that reality.
We see transportation as one of the hardest experiences we have dealt with when it came to some of the needs we need for Diomede, because it involves, you know, long term, if you're off Diomede, it's harder to get back. It deals with the doctor, eye care, dental, all the other departments.
Diomede's contract with Pathfinder Aviation is ending later this year. And as of now, it is unknown if that contract will be renewed or how it will be affected by EAS. Ozena expressed positive sentiments about transportation and its future in Diomede.
Know that we have essential air service, you know, and then we're in our third year with them. We are satisfied with transportation. I mean, we'd like to see more of it. I think that would really be good.
This has been an ongoing effort between Kuwerik, the village of Diomede, and the Alaska Congressional Delegation since 2014. Reporting from Nome, I'm Emily Hofstetter.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting. And by First National Bank Alaska, offering online and mobile tools to help Alaskans succeed. Promises kept, trust earned since 1922. FNBAAlaska.com. Want a fulfilling volunteer opportunity educating and protecting your community? As a trained Medicare counselor, you'll help stop fraud and connect people with the benefits they've earned. You can make a powerful difference for Alaska seniors. Learn more at medicare.alaska.gov or call Alaska's Medicare Information Office at 800-478-6065. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugia,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow,
Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechmiut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, a change of scenery. Acclaimed South African musician Vusi Malisela has played on stages all over the world, and this month he traveled north to Alaska. But before he played his formal show at the Alaska Center for the Performing Arts, he booked a gig in an unexpected place. Alaska Public Media's Kirsten Swan was there.
This isn't Vusi Malisela's usual venue. He's standing in the mostly empty gym at Eagle River's Highland Mountain Correctional Center, warming up on a portable stage, surrounded by dozens of empty folding chairs set up in rows across the floor. He says he's here for a reason.
It doesn't matter really where I go, because whatever that spirit, wherever that spirit sends me, it is for a purpose.
This particular show was organized by the Anchorage Concert Association, working with the Department of Corrections. When the audience begins to file into the auditorium, they're wearing matching yellow pants and yellow shirts. Their shirts all say the same thing, prisoner. And they're not quite sure what to expect. There have been musical performances here before, but Vusi Malisela is a surprise. Then Superintendent Gloria Johnson takes the mic.
Yes, I got great news for you. I just didn't call you down here to ask you how are you doing. You came down to be intrigued with a special treat, a concert this afternoon.
When Malisela steps onto the stage and starts the show, the audience is hooked.
Say Africa.
Africa.
Say Africa.
Africa.
Say Africa.
In South Africa, he's known as The Voice. Back in 1994, he performed at Nelson Mandela's inauguration. He brought that same kind of energy to the stage at Highland.
You might have read us in a film about Africa. You know, it's a big continent with a great gift of Ubuntu.
In between songs, he stopped to teach the audience about the history of the music and sometimes offer a few words of advice.
But if you don't forgive, you become like your own prisoner. You become like a bitter leaf that can just be squashed or be swept away by the wind anytime. So forgiveness is very important, and we should all wear it like a crown. Thank you.
You could feel the mood change in the room as he played. People in the audience smiled as they watched and listened. When the tempo picked up, women danced in their seats. Corrine Camille says the music carried her to a place outside the prison walls.
I was thinking about trying to picture like where, what it looks like where they're from. Just trying to get something in my mind of what it would look like with people dancing and just something. It took me out of here.
Kendria Husky was sitting in the front row.
I mean, the music, it was like, it was giving me goosebumps.
When Malisela sang, she said, she felt like he was delivering a deeper message.
That was a testimony to me, you know what I mean? So I was able to understand, you know, the concept because, you know, I'm African American and American Indian, so I was able to get my heritage, my culture right here, given to me in a place that you would never imagine.
After Malisela performed, audience members had the chance to ask questions about his music, his work with the Nelson Mandela Foundation, his travels, and his trip to Alaska. The Anchorage Concert Association says the event is part of a broader strategy to bring music to everyone in the community. Kendria described it like this.
It was a blessing, you know what I mean? It was an extreme blessing. I believe that everything happens for a reason, and also that you gotta be in the right place at the right time, and I just so happened to be here at this right time. Not that I want to be here, but, you know, I did, you know, I have to do what I have to do. So, I mean, this was perfect. I would have never imagined finding this type of opportunity in a place like this.
As the melodies filled the gym, Malisela noticed a shift in the audience. People's eyes lit up. As he watched their faces, he says he could see the music's impact.
And we could actually read some kind of transformation from the faces of everybody, you know? Yeah, and that's when you see that, you've served the purpose.
That's the thing about music, he says. It can transform you. Malisela is scheduled to wrap up his Alaska tour Saturday in Juneau.
Say Africa! Say Africa! Say Africa! Say Africa!
For AK, I'm Kirsten Swan.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Nolan Charles from Tuksuk Bay. 16-year-old Charles is part of the Tuksuk Bay Yupik Dancers, who performed in AFN's opening ceremony this week.
We've performed AFN back in Fairbanks 2 years ago. Now we're performing again this year. Oh, it's like practice. It's like it's passing it down to generation. Even drumming and dancing is like a stress reliever for us. It calms us down. There's much love around us, like family dancing with us. And we forget about everything when we dance, like when we dance and when we drum. Oh, and we have like LKSD dance festivals, like where all the LKSD gathers in one village and go dance. There's many things here in Alaska, like seeing different cultures from different places. Like they have Inupiaq people, we have the Yupik people, Chupik people. There's all kinds of cultures in Alaska. I've been growing up speaking my language. That's how we've mostly speak in Yupik, because they wanted us to speak in Yupik. And both, like both English and Yupik. My goal is to go to college somewhere out of state and like try and become something better. Like try and do good for the people. Like help people. So there's love everywhere, so we have like a lot of relatives around. So like if I make my family tree, I'll have to use maybe a couple posters.
It will be a forest.
Nolan Charles lives in Tuksuk Bay. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Kirsten Swan and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at AK Public News. We had reports tonight from Andrew Kitchenman in Juneau, Zachariah Hughes and Abby Collins in Anchorage, Liz Ruskin in Washington, D.C., and Emily Hofstetter in Nome. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Wesley Early is our producer, and I'm Casey Grove. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by ConocoPhillips, investing and exploring on the North Slope and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, unlocking Alaska's energy resources. And by Wells Fargo, offering financial tools to start, run, and grow a business. Learn more at wellsfargoworks.com.
The Northwest Arctic Subsistence Regional Advisory Council will discuss proposals to change federal subsistence fish and shellfish regulations and other subsistence-related issues, and invites public participation at a meeting October 24th and 25th, starting at 9 a.m. at the Northwest Arctic Borough Assembly Room in Kotzebue. More at 800-478-1456 or doi.gov/subsistence/regions. This message sponsored by the Office of Subsistence Management.
This is statewide news on Alaska Public Media.